pattern. So welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning member meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I'd like to introduce introduce Julie R. from California as our speaker, who has at least 6 months of abstinence and has recovered through the directions in the Big Book and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be a time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program and or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Julie R. Thank you.
Hi, thank you very much for asking me to speak at your meeting. My name is Julie R. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And I say recovered because my book here tells me that the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism, compulsive overeating, that's the cover page, recovered, not cured. So to go ahead and give you a little bit of history about myself and why I belong in an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. So I started overeating, like probably many of us, at a very early age. It was actually around age 8. And I quickly learned that, you know, food did something for me that at that time I needed. It's like, you know, it talks about that effect that we get from the food, which of course I didn't understand that as an 8-year-old child. But I know it was just kind of like that, you know, I can handle anything. I would eat, and then, you know, the fear and the angst and the trepidation and all the stuff that was going on in my household just kind of got a little bit better. You know, and I'm not a compulsive overeater because I had a dysfunctional childhood, because there's many of us in this room that have had loving, caring, giving parents, and they're compulsive overeaters. I am just one because I have the twofold illness. And, you know, for the newcomer, you know, what is that? It's like, well, I have an allergy of the body, and the doctor's opinion is really good about describing what that is. For me, it's anytime that I eat an allergic food, which has certain ingredients that cause my physical allergy. And for me, it's, you know, of course, the cakes, cookies, candies, but it's even had to go down to farther levels than that. And I'll get into that later. But I have the obsession of the mind. So I can't, you know, stay stopped, and I can't stop from starting. If I'm not recovered, and if I'm just abstinent and not living a spiritual life that we learn how to do by working the 12 steps, the obsession of the mind will take me back to the food at any time. It could just happen. So I was about 8 years old. I learned that food could do something for me to calm me down in bad situations. My mom put me on my first diet. We went to Pay and Weigh when I was probably 12, and I was 10 pounds overweight. I had a lot of physical issues when I was a kid. I could never run, jump, hop. I had knee surgeries all the time. I was in casts in the hospital. So I was already different because of that, but there was always something different about me because I knew other people didn't think about food like I did. You just kind of know, even though I was a kid, I could watch other people, and they weren't just like waiting to get to the food trays. So I knew I there was something different. So my mom would say, you know, no man is going to want a fat girl. And I was like 10 pounds overweight. So we went to the Pay and Weigh. And of course, you go on a diet. Diets work, right? For everybody, but for compulsive overeaters. Because once we get to our goal weight, then to us, it's like, oh, I can go ahead and eat. I would go on the Pay and Weigh, lost weight, then I gain it. Lost weight, gain it. And I still didn't understand that the connection with me taking a first bite of something after I went off a diet, and then I would just go on this horrific binge until the binge stopped. I mean, it's not like I could actively say, oh, I'm going to stop after 5 of these. I would eat the whole bag, maybe 2 bags, and go on to something else and go on to something else. And then I was either too physically ill to eat anymore. I would literally pass out because I was so drunk on food, or I got interrupted. Those are the 3 reasons why I could stop eating. So all through high school, you know, of course, boys came into play. I always felt so fat, so hideous, and so ugly. In the summertime, I would wear loose jackets. I was a size like 12, 10. And I thought I was so big that nobody could see my body and how hideous I was. And again, you know, this was all part of the whole thing about being a compulsive overeater for me, is that body image. Tried drugs, a lot of drugs to try to lose weight or to not gain the weight. I learned about vomiting in high school as well. So that was pretty good. You know, it kept me, I was able to binge and then not gain the weight because I could just throw up. You know, as I got, I don't think I was out of high school yet, but I was already doing the, you know, going to the three different Jack in the Boxes, acting like I was ordering for other people, always getting a Diet Coke. And it's like playing these games that I think nobody else understood, that I was the same person going to all these 7-Elevens and all these places to eat. I would have to eat a large amount of food before I would go to an activity because I felt so insecure. I was fear, what if they didn't like me? What if I said something wrong? What am I going to do? So again, that effect that we get from the food, or that perceived effect, because it doesn't work anymore. I would eat it hoping for that buzz, hoping for that calmness. And then of course, it'd be like anything, you have to have more and more and more. I tried every kind of diet there was. I moved out as soon as I graduated from high school. I don't think I was 18 yet. It was a couple months shy of 18. And, you know, it's like the first night of my freedom, my father was a predator and beat, you know, blah, 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 but it doesn't matter. My first night of my apartment, it was like, oh my God, I'm going to be by myself and it's going to be awesome. I went to the grocery store and bought every kind of binge food that we were never allowed in the house, because my mom, you know, was a stay-at-home mom back then. I'm 64. So everything was made from scratch and it was pretty healthy. And I binged and purged and looked out the window afraid that somebody's going to come in my house and kill me. That is how my first night of my freedom was. So I gained 100 pounds in about 6 months. So now I looked like I always thought I looked. And I started all the diets. I did hypnosis. I got injected by pregnant women's urine, the Suzanne Summers diet, Richard Simmons, anything you could think of. The Hollywood, what was that? It was a Hollywood one. To this day, I can't eat mangoes. I mean, that's all I ate for like 6 months. And again, diets work, but not for us, not for the real compulsive overeater. So I would lose 70, gain 40. Lose 80, gain 70. So it was like I was losing ground quite rapidly. And I was vomiting up to 6 times a day at that, you know, that weight. So I got a couple pictures of my, I'm 5'2". I have a pear shape. No matter what size I am, I can't get rid of that pear. But let me share my screen. Tell me if you see it. Share. I'm sharing the right one?
Yes, we see it.
Okay. So I was probably on the top left picture. I don't know if you can see my mouse. I was probably 250. I'm 5'2". Here, you can see I'm sitting next to a treadmill. I have something hanging on. I got a bowl of chips to my right. I don't know how much I weighed there. As you could tell, I could barely fit into the chair. Here I'm. This was one of my relapses. I had lost 100 and something pounds a couple of times. I never left OA, thank you God, but it was a relapse. And you can just look at my face. I'm serving hamburgers. I do not look like I'm having fun, right? You know, I'm being of service. I'm trying to be the jolly fat person. Here's me with my oldest son. He's 31 now. So I would go up in weight depending if I was in relapse or not. And this was me last Christmas. I bake. I've been doing this for 45 years. And it's like, this is my third year in a row I was able to bake and not lick, taste, not even want one. And then here's my two boys and my husband at Disney World. And it's like, you know, to be able to wear the same clothes I've wore for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, is kind of nice. But so I've been maintaining like 155 pound weight loss for the most part. I want to say 6 or 7 years. I did have a relapse on there that I had gained 40 at one time. So yes, I'm a real compulsive overeater. Every time I ingest any of my alcoholic foods, I'm done. Even if it's like I can eat almonds, but if you were to give me a cashew, I don't know how long I would be in relapse because I can't stop. So we all, the doctor's opinion is so key, right? Because we have to learn what our alcoholic foods are. It's like, you know, how do we go through the steps like the big book? What do we do? But I got a nutritionist. I got a nutritionist that knows OA as also. And I also worked with my sponsor on what my red foods are and green. I don't do yellow foods because if I got a hint of it's not going to go well, I stay away from it. So in the doctor's opinion, it also talks about, you know, entire abstinence. You know, when I first started OA in 1981, you know, we had 3 meals a day, stay away from flour and white sugar. We had only the big book in the 12 and 12. We didn't even have OA literature, but abstinence was still not, it wasn't as defined as your alcoholic foods. I mean, and so hence during OA's time, I had my relapses. And it's like, but why did I have relapses? I know I'm kind of jumping over around. I've been sick, so hopefully I'm making some kind of sense. I guess I should finish my story. So for the newcomer, you know, I've eaten frozen foods. I've eaten food so hot that it's burned the roof of my mouth. I've put food in the garbage to take it out. I've eaten off other people's plates when I do cleanup, when I'd have a party. And this is, I think I'm a normal professional woman. I have a great career, but if any of those people saw how I would eat like a wild animal. I mean, literally food. I was eating so fast, I would choke. Crumbs all over me. I mean, I would wake up and there would be so much food wrappers in my bed. You know, I ate my son's Halloween candy and let my other son take the blame. It's so funny. They're 31 and 25. We went camping a couple weeks ago when he flew in and they talked about that. You remember when mom was in relapse and she ate my candy and I had to take the blame? I mean, I had to make amends for that. I mean, now we can laugh about it, but it wasn't so funny for an 8-year-old to get in trouble because he ate his brother's candy and it was mom, right? I mean, do you think I wanted to do that? No, but this disease takes us to places that we don't act like a normal human being. And that's something mild. I mean, we can do a lot of bigger things. And I'm not making light of it, but it's just like we're dishonest, we're devious, we're manipulative. You know, when I'm in the disease, I am nothing like I am when I'm living in spiritual principles. It's like night and day, like the Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Hyde, you know, we read about. So yes, I've done everything possible that you could think of with food. I've up and down in weight, and every one of my relapses happened way before I picked up the food. It's because I stopped growing in my spirituality. Because we, you know, we're not meant to just arrive. We're not meant just to live in 10, 11, and 12. We are supposed to thrive in 10, 11, and 12. So back to, you know, how do you go through the steps, right? And by the big book. Well, I've had many different sponsors over the years take me through many different ways, but everything is in these 164 pages. You know, that's how we work this program. It's got exact instructions, and it's kind of cool. I have to put my glasses on again. Sorry. So on that front page, you know, I don't know if it's blurry, but I mean, it's not going to work, but it's all broken down. I mean, you know, Dr. Bob and Bill were just awesome, because step one is from the doctor's opinion through the beginning of We Agnostics. There's like 44 pages of just what step one is, because it's key. Step one, you got to have step one, or none of the other steps are going to make any sense. You know, that I admit that I'm powerless over food. My life is unmanageable. And that's that second part of step one, that unmanageability. I could be abstinent, but my life could still be a complete mess and I'm living in those bedevilments. So that's not going to help anybody. I'm not spiritually fit. And so step one is key. It talks about entire abstinence. You know, you figure that out with the nutritionist and with your God squad or whatever you want to call it. What are those foods that every time you eat, you either go eat and you go on a binge, or you want more and you get the obsession kicks in. And it takes this trial and error sometimes. But I mean, I have it down, like I mentioned, to the nut. I can have almonds and walnuts, period. You give me a handful of sunflower seeds, done. That was a binge food as a kid. There's fruit. Well, no, fruit's okay. I won't eat mangoes from many diets. But it's like, I can have brown rice, but I cannot have white rice because I associate it when I was a kid and I had white rice with sugar and butter. I don't do butter because I used to eat it by the cube with crackers. I mean, disgusting, but that's what I do. So you have to really learn what those ingredients are and the behaviors too. We don't talk about that a lot, I think, in the rooms like we should. It's like standing up eating. It's when I cook, doing the taste test. I don't do that. I get my kids, my husband, Clay, I need you to come over here and taste something, because that is too loose for me to sit there and to take licks and use my finger to get something out of the bowl. I mean, you know, I weigh and measure all of my food, and I'm free. I don't have to deal with it. You know I get 12 ounces of that, 4 ounces of this, 6 ounces of that, and I'm over and done with. So step one is so, so important. That's why there's 44 plus pages to it. And then step two, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It doesn't say that, oh my God, I'm automatically going to find this God and everything is wonderful. It's came to believe, to know that the God that I've had before is not working. So therefore, there's something more out there. And I know it's not me, and it's not a person. It's not a place. It's like there's something. And you just continue to do the work, you know, it's like, and we do it fast too. And fast means a lot of things differently to people. I take people in at about, it takes about 3 months for me when I take somebody through the steps, give or take a couple of weeks. And step three, right, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood God, in that moment. Because my God, no matter how many, I've gone through the steps a lot of times, but each time I get like another awakening with who my creator is. Because when I get into relapse, it's because I've fallen short and I've gone backwards in the steps. And it's like, well, what does that mean? It means that when I'm supposed to be doing my 10 steps, I'm just listening to other people's and not doing mine. So what does that mean? That means my resentments are building. And then I am not cleaning up my own amends. So I'm not doing my 9 step. And my 11th step practices got shorter. I wasn't doing 30 minutes in the morning. I was doing 5 minutes. I was doing 10 minutes. I was doing it sometimes throughout the day. My nightly review was not very impressive. Yes, no, yeah, sometimes. And I was sponsoring way too many people. I was doing way too much service. So that got so out of whack, you know, that service, the unity, it just was too much one and not enough of another. And I started just went bam. And then after about 3 or 4 months of living in a state of not having emotional sobriety, that's when I picked up. I didn't pick up because everything was wonderful and I succumbed to something. I picked up because I was not emotionally sober anymore. I wasn't living in serenity. I was abstinent, but I was angry. I was bitching at people about work. I was more negative, but I didn't really see it because it's so sneaky, this disease, right? It wants us dead, but somebody said that it'll take us to just being miserable. So that's how every time I have picked up after 3, 4, 5 years, like right now I have like 3.5 years of back-to-back 100% entire abstinence. And it's like, I'm going to make sure that I'm supposed to do everything I'm supposed to do. And so you go do a 4-step and you really do it exactly like the big book says. I don't do fancy sheets. I don't do anything more than what the big book says. There are some sheets out there that are just outlined like the big book. And when we do the resentment, the fears and the sex inventory, which some of us have been with the same partner for years, or we don't have a partner. It doesn't mean sex, it's relationships. And I ended up doing relationship ideas with employers, employees, my children, sponsor, sponsees. You know, how am I supposed to be a sponsor? How do I expect my sponsees to be? You know, and it's kind of like I have these little 8 or 3x5 cards that list my stuff because I need to be reminded of that. So we then do a fifth step, and then we do our six and seven. And six and seven, you know, there's a lot of good stuff out there. And yeah, I know it's only one paragraph, but I was blessed with the last time I went through the steps, there was some really good stuff about going through your character defects. And, you know, how did I act? How do I behave? How do I look when I'm engaging in my top five character defects? Rolling my eyes at somebody in a meeting, tapping my finger, interrupting them before they had a chance to talk. I mean, those kind of things. Then I had to write what was the solution of impatience. Well, obviously it's patience. How would it look with that same employee if I had patience? So I had to write down that I would count to 10 before I offered something. I would make sure I didn't have any pencils nearby so I wouldn't be tapping on my desktop. I had tangible things to do. So you go through six and seven, and I rewrote. I had my own seventh step prayer, which was pretty powerful. Step eight, you know, you make that list that you have from your four step of the people that I harmed. And not all those people even show up there. They're going to show up after you do your inventory. You make your harms list, making those amends. You know, they say most people go into relapse because they don't finish their four step and they don't do their amends. And those are the two things that will get us quicker in relapse than anything. And, you know, amends are not fun. I went to make amends to my sister for the second time. It's a sister that I don't have a lot of relationship with. The first time I made amends to her, I said, well, you know, I know you're sick and everything, but, you know, I want to tell you I'm sorry for things that I did. That wasn't very good. Obviously, I didn't go through my sponsor on that one, right? That was about 20 years ago. So, you know, fast forward, it was my last relapse. So I went to make amends to her. And I'm 64 and she's 75. And she ripped me a new one. And she had a lot more things to say, which I knew weren't true, but it didn't matter. I'm not there to debate. I sat there and I listened. I let her know that she was heard. I never use the word sorry because I was taught that before. The big book doesn't use sorry. You know, I really regret the way that I acted and the harm that it caused. And is there, you know, when I said, is there anything I left out? Oh boy, she let me know. And to this day, what's really kind of funny is we probably have the best relationship we've ever had in our entire lives. Do I still call her up to go shopping with her? No, we don't have that kind of relationship like I do with my other sister. But she called me today. And I'll call her probably next week. So we make amends. And step 10, you know, what is step 10? Oh, I love step 10 because it's so easy. And when we do it, right? But we think sometimes we don't need to do it. But there's a lot of people that do a lot of different things for step 10. And I'm not here to say, oh, they're wrong, but I just do it exactly like the big book. So on page 84, it talks about, it brings us to step 10. And I love it because they use the word continue five times. And when do you start doing a step 10? As soon as you do one amends, you go right into it. We want to set right new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living. You know, it's that thriving. We just don't like go through the day. We vigorously commence this way of living. As we cleaned up the past, again, you got to do your amends. We have entered the world of the spirit. So right now, it's like I've entered the world of the spirit. So I'm not thinking and behaving and acting like the way I did when I was in the disease, either eating or not being emotionally sober. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, period. When these things crop up, not if, when they crop up, we ask God at once in the moment, okay, I just realized that I was doing character assassination with another fellow on our teams. God, please remove my need to put somebody down to make myself feel better. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly. If we've harmed anyone, if I haven't harmed anyone, I don't need to go to another person. But if it doesn't go away, if it comes back an hour from now or 2 hours, then I go to somebody if God hasn't removed it. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And that doesn't have to be an OA person. It could be my husband. It could be a coworker. It could be my boss. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So that's what a 10th step is. It's not, it doesn't say anything about it being written like our 4-step or our nightly review, right? I mean, it doesn't say that, you know, you take pen to paper. It says we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. So food was never our problem. Food was our solution. My problem was that I didn't have a creator. I didn't have power. I lacked power. So what do? By going through the steps, we gain power through, you know, by getting a higher power, God, creator, whatever you want to call it. That was my problem, is that I didn't have power. We will seldom be interested in food. If tempted, we recoil like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we're going to find that this has happened automatically. We're safe and protected. Hence why I bake all those cookies. I bake like 2,000 to 3,000 cookies every Christmas, and I've been doing it for 40, 45 years for coworkers. Now, if I wasn't spiritually fit, let's say my husband had a brain tumor, he had strokes, he had seizures, not even a year ago, I felt baked when he had that because he wanted to taste it. So I did. But if I felt off, let's say, I wouldn't have baked. But so then step 11 is very clear. On awakening, it tells me what to do on awakening. It tells me what to do throughout the day. It tells me what to do at night. And that nightly review is 12 specific questions. I try to stick to those 12 questions. It worked for Bill and everyone else, so it sure can work for me. I don't need to reinvent the wheel. But on awakening, let us think about the next 24 hours ahead. These are precise instructions. We consider our plans for the day. Before I begin, I ask God to direct my thinking, asking to be divorced from self-pity, self-seeking motives. For God, I love that God gave us brains, right? And thinking about our day, we may face indecision. So here again, I'm asking God throughout the day, hey, you know, I need some direction here. I want to make sure I'm not going to fall short. So all throughout the day, I'm seeking my creator. Does that mean it's like every 10 minutes? No. I used to set an alarm on my Apple Watch to go off every hour. Thank God, you know, until it became such a habit for me that I can do that. Do I forget sometimes if I'm in a crazy hectic day? And it's like, oh my God, it's 4 o'clock and I'm so agitated. Oh, I didn't bring God into my day. So I do it right then and there. I mean, we're human. The only thing that we can be perfect with is our food, right? That's where we can be. That's the only thing that can be perfect. Black and white abstinence. The rest of the stuff is we're human and we continue to grow spiritually. And then step 12, you know, you got a whole chapter working with others, chapter 7. It tells me exactly how to find people, what to talk to them on my first meeting, what to talk to them on my second meeting. You know, that we're there to support them. We're, you know, a guide. You know, even says, you know, I was always told your sponsor's not your friend. But throughout this chapter, it talks about our sponsor being our friend. It doesn't mean that, you know, it's not the same as my best girlfriend, but it's a friend. We love our sponsees. We care for them. We want them to heal. We want them to get well. And we do this vigorously, right? We don't just do it half-assed. The first couple sentences, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from eating as intensive work with other compulsive overeaters. It works when other activities fail. It's really hard to sponsor somebody and really go in this book and relive your own step one experience and your step two while you're trying to eat food. It just doesn't go hand in hand. And how I sponsor is I have one person at the beginning of the first 5 steps and then one from step 6 through 12. And as soon as that one goes on, and then we start meeting at a slower cadence, then I get another person. I always like to have two because I can't sponsor too many people because that's not good for me. I don't, you know, I used to do like a lot of speaking and a lot of this. And it's like, no, I don't, I don't do a lot of that either. I just want to be one amongst many because we're all the same. We're all the same. There's no superstars. I mean, it's like you could tell. I have notes everywhere. I don't know why it's so blurry. There we go. I have notes everywhere because when I'm taking somebody through the steps, I'm right there with them. I don't read line from line, but I have them read it, highlight stuff, and then we talk about it together. to make sure that we're on the same page. And you know, that's what I do. This is how I live. And it's like, so what do I do when I wake up in the morning? First, I go get a cup of coffee. And then I do a couple prayers, and then I'll do some different modalities. I do sage, I can drum, I have tarot cards, I have oracle cards, I have guided meditations. I just do a lot of different things. And then I'll do my nightly review because I'm so tired at night. I usually just do it super early in the morning. And then I'll read my sponsees' nightly reviews, make sure, you know, see how they are and respond. And then I start my day. Before, I would look at Facebook and Instagram first. I don't have to do that anymore. I do that after. I still do it. I do it after. But and then throughout the day, I try to bring God into my day because I'm an ego person, right? I like to do things. I like to be right. I like to be in control. So God levels that out, keeps me even. Is my time up? I think maybe. Oh, perfect. So yeah. So that's what I do. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Julie. Now it's time for